Thank you. So my name is Margaret, and I'm happy to be here together with blooming pussy willows. Pussy willow is actually the first food for honeybees. The ones who made it through last winter, they would not go out today, obviously, but they would literally drown themselves in the pollen. Honeybees, the first brood of the spring, the only food is pollen, and pussy willows is one of the first pollen there is. And the first time I bought one of these 15 years ago in a florist store, I put it in water. These two are bushes now as big as this room. And anybody who wants, I should have brought some. I'm welcomed. I'll bring some, and anybody can do the same thing at their house. And the first time they were blooming, I had an intern at my house, a high school student who was loved photography, and it was end of March, April, and I said, well, we can look over at the pussy willows if any bees are out. We go with her camera and go hunting, and there is no bees. Until I became still and said, I'm just going to try to hear if there are bees. And it was fascinating, I will never forget, because just then I heard as what we just heard now, except that was buzzing of a making comb. The buzz was being inside a hive. So what I drew from that, and then of course you saw the bees at everywhere, hundreds of bees. So the eye sometimes can't see when something is right in front of you, which was quite amazing because you're looking for it, and when you stop and listen, it's right there. So today's, I guess, obviously about sound. Talking about bees is tricky because it's a huge subject. And I love the song this morning because we're trying to not go down the doomsday scenario. As many of you know, bees are in dire need. There was an article just a couple of days ago, 370 species out of 4,000 species of native bees and 2,000 of honeybees around the world are close to extinction, which is very, very grim. And Einstein said that if bees do not exist anymore, the human species is going to follow 4 years later. I don't really share that myself too much, simply because if we label something, then we'll just buy into that label. So, but we'll first start on the bright side. So I'm hoping to inform you, make it a little bit of fun, and that we all can raise to a new awareness of what it's like to be a bee. Mystery. I find personally there's few mysteries in life left because of science. Mystery of life itself. When a baby is born is mystery. When we die, nobody can predict exact the same hour. How wonderful. And what other mystery do we have? To me, and that's where I got into bees. Bees are mysterious to me and have always been. And I think as long as we're around, they won't be researched into the detail that researchers want to research them. And the fourth thing is mushrooms. So you don't know when they come up and where they come up. So hooray to mystery. The other question that I want to ask all of us is why we so often separate ourselves from nature. As we're looking at nature, we're looking at environmental disasters, which are plenty right now. We're looking at blaming pesticides for bees, which is all correct. But I really want to ask that deeper question, is in what ways can we identify ourselves more with nature itself, which is with bees, rather than looking at bees. I started my path about 21 years ago, and Patrick, who is not here today, he's already off to do music. He was born in April, and in May, there were two swarms in the yard, and a neighbor said, "Do you have an exterminator? You have an exterminator?" And I knew nothing about honeybees. And I looked at them. I said, "This is not. These are not wasps." So it was luck, whole ropes of luck. I looked in a penny saver. There was a beekeeper, and I called him, and he came over an hour later from Somers. I don't remember his name. Nothing, with boxes, and he swooped the two swarms with his bare hands into the box, and he said, "Here, they're yours." And I was like, "I don't know." So I had a neighbor. Most likely they did come from a neighbor, because when you have a swarm, they're most likely somewhere around 200 to 500 yards away from your house. They don't go too far the first day. Anyhow, she sweet mentor helped me quite a bit at the beginning. And from then on, I lost them many times, and I've been learning. So I've been learning backwards. Would I recommend that way? Not really anymore, because it's too hard now. We really need to learn our beekeeping before we start, but I did it backwards. Bees have been around for 250 million years. They have not evolved much or at all. So that tells us bees are really perfect. They are perfect in their community, in the way they work together, similar to ants. There's one queen, and I'm really don't want to go too much to in the life stage today, because it's so, even though it's fascinating, but rather talk about some other issues and have room for discussion. But there's one queen, and we all probably know she's it, one queen. And she lays 2,000 eggs a day. There are a few drones. I'll point out some films you can see, some wonderful documentaries, so we'll go into that. There is some wonderful history. So with the question of why are we separate, my question, personal question is, why were humans mesmerized with bees for forever? The Egyptians and the Greeks, and as we are now, we all adore honey. We're all in awe how this apple is pollinated. So it's quite wonderful. Artemis, according to the myth, bee priestess fed and raised Zeus in a cave in Crete. And where is Melissa? She is not here. Well, she doesn't know. Melissa means bee. Melissa actually means bee in Greek. And there is a plant that's called lemon balm. And as beekeepers, we always put lemon balms around beehives. And the Latin name for lemon balm is Melissa. So there is a lot we still use. Apollo ate nectar and became so handsome that his father Zeus called him the god of light. Aphrodite in Eros tells us in a famous poem that Eros wanted to steal honeycombs full of honey, and as punishment, the bees stung him, thereby making symbolic reference to bittersweet nature of love. There is one wonderful from the Greek. Glaucus, the son of Minos, drowned in a jar of honey and was brought back to life. The myth was so popular. Oh, he was given some herbs and came back to life. The myth was so popular, and the expression Glaucus drank honey and was resurrected was commonly used for someone who was at risk of death but survived. I'm trying to not read all of it here. We have this one. There is one thing I read a while back is in Crete, there was a bee-like, a comb-like structure where the priestesses had to go 3 days in solitary to make, to contemplate on decisions. Wouldn't that be wonderful if we did that? So to really, before you come up with decision-making, you go and contemplate. And similar to the sound, what we had is contemplate to the sound of bees. Oops. Then we come to the Roman period. Oh, we didn't really go the Egyptian. And I really urge anyone who has interest is looking things up. There is so much to read about. The king Ra, the tears of Ra were considered honey. Egyptians would always put honey in jars in their tombs for the afterlife. They found 2,000 years later, it's still edible. Honey does not spoil, partly due to propolis. Oops, where is it? Well, it's right over here. And you, at break, I'll urge you to smell it. It's a wonderful smell. Propolis is made from resin of pine trees. It was one of the first six ingredients of mummification, the secret six ingredients. And what bees do, they make propolis. It's highly antibacterial, antifungal. It's huge. It keeps them healthy. They do it for themselves, not for us. And if a mouse goes into a beehive, because the mouse likes to stay warm in the winter and makes a nest, then the bees say, no way, sting the mouse. Once they sting, they die. So they say, I'd rather die for the hive. Then they wrap the mouse in propolis so it doesn't smell up the hive. And 2 years later, when it's disintegrated, they pull it out again. So it's quite amazing. Bees are extremely clean. They never go to the bathroom in the hive. They can hold it up to 3 months if necessary. And they fly, do a cleansing flight when it's about 40 degrees. So under 40, they stay inside and hover like penguins to stay warm. So from the Egyptians, we hop to the Roman period. Honey production use was not only continued, but it was brought to another level for three reasons. The use of honey in food and therapeutic preparations like medicine was also generalized. And it became money. It was used for money in the Mayans. The Mayans had a trade. The southern part of Yucatan was bees, and the northern, vice versa. The northern part of Yucatan was bees keeping, and the southern part was chocolate. So they would have a trade. So it was considered money. It was considered money in the Middle Ages, where meat became very popular. Meat is fermented honey, very easy to make. And similar to beer, it was safer to drink than unclean water, and it became money. If you had to, when you go to a wedding, you had to bring 6 liters of mead. Otherwise, I don't know what happens. And the third most important reason in the Roman period is they discovered the use of beeswax in candles. So bees really give us wax, honey, propolis, and of course the gift of pollination. And when we look at the gift of pollination now, that is the most important part to us now. It was not the most important part to Romans, Greeks, and Egyptians. I don't think they knew about pollination. I don't know. I doubt it. Because I have to think about that myself. Beekeeping itself evolved in all of Europe, as did new types of materials. First, they had them in tree stumps, inside the woods. They made skeps out of those famous, this is called a skep, skeps out of straw to this day. It's very popular. And then 1850, they started making, developing the Langstroth hive, the hive that we have nowadays. And it's not necessarily the best hive. It's the best for commercial beekeepers. It's not in the interest of bees. Bees do not like squares. So this is called a Langstroth hive. It's a box, and they're all the same sizes all across the world. But bees are organic. This is, bees made this structure when they did not have a hive with slats inside. So that's one of the problem that we face, that we don't have an alternative way of a box for them. Christians incorporated wax candles into their worshiping, and to this day, somebody told me, I'm not 100% sure, that in Catholic churches, candles have to have 60% beeswax in worshiping, and there are many written texts citing parallelism between the sweetness of honey and the word of God. Milk and honey, where there's lots of reference. The relationship between humans and bees is very well described in the Quran. I just found this out myself. The Lord gave you the bee. He directed the bee to fly between the mountains and to produce wax and honey from its stomach, giving light on one hand and therapy on the other. Consider the relationship between bees and plants, their aversion to filth, and their obedience to the leader, and you will be wonderfully surprised. So as we can see here, it's all in the perception. I never looked at obedience in honeybees. And the queen, I guess we do have to have a little, do a little science. The queen has one flight in her lifetime, and I think it's on here. She has one mating flight. She hatches, she has one mating flight. She mates with about 6 to 8 drones, and this is their entire existence is for that one flight. They chase, and whoever gets her up in the air, he's a lucky one, and then he dies. So it's not a sorry. Sorry about that. So her entire DNA comes from 7 different drones, and that's enough for her lifetime. She never flies out. She leaves. She is inside the hive her entire year. Nowadays, we're lucky if a queen lasts a year. So it's much troublesome. Then the bee hatches. She lays her eggs, and pictures are down there, into the comb. The eggs are fed pollen, only pollen, that's it, and capped over, and 21 days later, a bee crawls out. It's quite lovely to see that when they bite their way out, similar to the chickens, 21 days. Same to monarch butterflies, 21 days. The bee has a job. The day she emerges, she becomes a wax bee. And that's her entire job. She cannot complain. This is it. And they have a wax gland where they press out the wax, the shape of the comb. Once she graduates from that job, I have to trace back for a second. I always think it's quite amazing to think that bees, in absolute darkness, they have never seen the daylight, make wax and give us humans light. So I see a special relationship in there because we like beeswax. The second job is she becomes a nurse bee, and her job is to feed the baby bees. They never leave home. They stay with their eggs, with the brood. Even in an emergency, they crawl inside and hover over the brood. And then the bee gets to go to grad school and fly out and pollinate, bring back nectar. the nectar, the proboscis puts the nectar right into the comb, which is very liquidy. Then she has to hover over the comb, flap her wings very fast until the liquid is 17% humidity. How does a bee know that? It's quite mysterious. So it has to be exact the amount of liquid to not run out, or B, if it wouldn't be 17%, it would ferment and smell up the place and be useless. Then they cap it over with wax, and then that's it. And pretty much after that, the bee dies. So lifetime, a bee only lasts about 6 weeks, except the last bee born in the fall, she is like the monarch butterfly. She lasts through the whole winter. And in the winter, like November, the queen stops laying eggs until February. And as long as she has enough pollen and protein, she gets going again. And then new bees come out. The drone, there is worker bees, pretty much all worker bees. This roughly would have maybe 50,000-60,000 bees. This is about 80,000 bees in here. One queen, and there's about 500 to 600 drones in each. Because drones do not pollinate. They don't, they're there for a huge function, and that means in case something happens to the queen. When the queen becomes weak, which nowadays happens really very fast, sometimes after months already, the bees communicate and have a meeting and say, she's sorry, she's not doing her job right, and they make a new queen. By making a new queen is the queen lays her eggs. The worker bees choose roughly 5 cells, and there's a picture of the queen cell somewhere below, in give her royal jelly. Royal jelly is something that's very complicated, made in the brain of the bee. And so they choose random cells to say, one of those is going to be our queen. There is no raising hand. So that's why I don't go along with the Quran about obedience, because there is no election. There is no take me. So they 5 queen cells are raised and they hatch. The first queen that hatches, little brutality of nature, she races right to the other queen cells. And there's, later you can look at the cell over here. And she stings them. The queen has a stinger only for this purpose. She never would sting humans or other bees. The stinger is there to sting other queens. So one is the survivor. If 2 queens hatch at the same time, they have a fight. I've never heard it, but it's supposed to sound like raccoons fighting. And one survives. So, and that's why you have drones, because for that purpose. In the fall, the worker bees guide them. They have a little walk, and they guide them gently out the door. And right before they guide them out the door, they bite their wings off. And that's it for the drone. Because drones are seen as excess honey. We have to share too much honey in the winter. And in the spring, they make new drones. And science still does not know why drones often hang out in the same corner of the hive. So it's there's still a lot of mystery and questions around that too. We have till 20 of? Okay, all right. I'm trying not to get sidetracked, which is very hard with bees, and leave room for questions. In a minute, we'll go into what we can do, because there is things we can do, and that's why I don't want to be today have this a doomsday scenario, because it doesn't serve any of us, but rather, what is it that we can do? Staying for a second with the current issue. So beekeeping was, I was able to keep my bees often 4 years in a row. There is a lot of scenarios, a lot of things you can do wrong. You can have 20 beekeepers in a room, 20 different opinions, and they're all correct. And that's why I love beekeeping, because there is no, I do it better than you do, or I know more than you do. And a beekeeper who has done it for 50 years will tell you, I'm still learning, because there are so many scenarios. One has to use their own intuition. One can read as much as they want, and I think it's similar to raising children. You know, we can read books and books and books and listen to people, but we have to ultimately use our own intuition of what's right and wrong. And that's probably the hardest one to teach, and it's the hardest one to learn, because you're constantly double guessing yourself. And our area of beekeeping has become challenging due to weather. I mean, 70 degrees, the bees are out. They say, hooray, I can go. And they're in a clump, and over the winter, they're in a clump, heating themselves up. The middle bee is 95 degrees. When she has reached 95, she crawls out and jumps on top of the ball. And this is constantly changing, similar to penguins. When we have 70 degrees, they say, yay, time to split up. And they go into two balls, because the honey is up here. If it's like today, they can be hungry. They can be full of honey above, but that short path up above is enough to freeze them, and they die. So, but once we have 70 degrees and the next day we have 30 degrees, if everything is the just perfect cocktail, they can all die, and that has happened. So there's a lot of, it's very hard to pinpoint exactly what's happening. The majority reason, it's really, somebody once said, it's a cocktail that we serve the bees, a cocktail between pesticides, not enough food, cell towers. There's all these, for a while it was just cell towers, but now they really found out it's a combination of events that are here, and they're here to stay. Where our cell phones are here to stay. What doesn't have to stay is pesticides. What we all can do easily is stop buying plants from Home Depot. Cheap pansies, cheap whatever. It's cheap. Is because they are raised with GMO seeds. The seeds have been inoculated with Roundup. We can take corn for a minute. Corn seeds are inoculated. And I remember in Ohio at Victor's College, there's right next to where these fields of either soybeans or corn. That's Ohio. It's much of the Midwest. No more diversity. So the corn looks blue. It's a blue seed because it has Roundup. It's planted. It's to prevent weeds to grow up around it. When its tassels come out, the Roundup residues are in the tassels, in the pollen, and that's what the bees take home to their hives. And it just weakens them. It absolutely weakens them. So they don't have a chance to not, you cannot have organic bees next to a farmer who is spraying. Bees fly up to 2 miles. They don't ask your permission. So, and I think Westchester, we don't know of who's spraying around us. People still love their lawns without dandelions. Dandelions is a tremendous food for honeybees, as are weeds, as is goldenrod. So the spring, it's crocuses, whatever blooms. It's actually quite a bit. There's a beautiful little yellow flower called aconite. They're bright yellow. They make orange pollen. There's a picture of different types of pollen. Pussy willows. Then come the maple trees. There's all flowering trees is food for bees. Then come fruit trees. Fruit trees is a candy for bees. So, and then of course summer vegetables, lawn, clover is huge. And in the fall, we'd have goldenrod and asters, which is the last food for bees. So goldenrod is makes a darker honey. One suggestion that is so doable for everyone is to donate a quarter of your yard and stop mowing it. That's all you have to do. It's not even planting. We all come up with excuses why we can't have a wildflower garden, and they might all be valid. But if we simply stop and ignore a little bit of the yard and say, I'll give that back to nature, it's amazing what comes out. The beautiful white asters, natural plants that are deer resistant, and the bees cover them. So, herbs are easy to grow. They are so easy to grow, deer resistant, drought resistant. You can ignore them if you don't have time to water them, and hugely beneficial to bees, because bees take their ingredients, their therapeutic, active ingredients, I guess, like thymol in thyme. And they put that into the honey. So you're actually getting whatever chemicals are in herbs into your honey. And it's beneficial for everybody around. All right, I have one little creepy thing for everyone. When we talk about danger of being bee-less, a couple of years ago, I got into the sound of bees, which I absolutely admire as much as I did 21 years ago, as I do today, maybe even more now. The sound of a buzz is in the letter C. And bumblebees are a little lower. So every bee has, believe it or not, has a different note. Just call forth for a second the sound of a mosquito. It's high pitch, not very pleasant to the ear. And the sound of a wasp. You know when a wasp is around. It's irritating. The flight of a wasp is irritating. You know this is, the brain says, careful. Honeybees are vegetarians. Big difference. You'd never find honeybees at a garbage can because they eat pollen and nectar, and that's it. Wasps are meat eaters. They grab whatever they can find. Very different plight pattern, but very different sound. Their honeybees is much lower and gentler, and it's brown color. So there's been done a lot of research with bee sound. There is doctors in Europe who have a bed over a beehive, put their patient on the bed, and the sound is supposed to change the cell structure. So sound is really huge. I don't know if anybody a couple weeks ago heard the peepers. Now, I don't know what peeper sound does to our brain. I just know what it does to happiness. It has this ancient string to, wow, peepers, that means spring is coming. So it does something. So this one I found on sound and bees. The brain, it turns out, can't stand the quiet. When confronted with utter silence, it starts to hallucinate. Deep in the bowels of a nondescript 1950s-era government building is Bell Labs and its very own chamber, no longer in use. The nice folks at Bell Labs agreed to open it up for me. It's a frightening room at first glance. The door is 1,000 pounds, the walls 10 feet thick, and everything, floors, ceilings, all surfaces, is covered in yellowish acoustic baffling. Stranger still, the floor is made of a wire mesh and suspended 10 feet off the ground to prevent sound reflecting off the floor. I remember thinking two things as I walked in. One, This place looks like a beehive. Two, I can't believe how much work it takes to keep out sound. Door closes, lights off. Consider, every room, even the very quietest rooms, have a tone. In fact, in radio business, we call it the room tone. But this room has no tone at all. And it's impossible to describe what true silence does to our ears. The moment the door went thuck shut, my eardrums started to flutter, as if air was trying to force its way out of my ears in little puffs. Felt a wee bit nauseous, crackling, like shadowed static. I think my ears were physically searching for sound. After about 5 minutes, a brief, very vivid flash of bees buzzing, like a swarm zooming by my head, Doppler style, en route to attack another hive. I'm no idiot. I know my mind invented the bees because beehive was one of my last thoughts in my head before the lights went off. Regardless, the sound of bees in the dark was disconcerting. After about 20 minutes, I began to hear a high-pitched whine, which persisted. Not a hallucination, I'd later discover. According to the Bell Labbies, it was probably the sound of my circulatory system. I also heard the gentle thud of my heartbeat. So, it's like a science fiction, isn't it? And even though it's quite impossible, but every one of you who like the sound of silence, and it's a beautiful sound, but if we lose sound of insects, it really would be very, very, I don't know the word. We don't know, because it has never happened to us as a human species. So that's where I'm taking why we need bees in our neighborhoods. And Brian is, and Melissa, please tell Melissa she's, that's a Greek name for bee. Yes, yeah. And they're our new UU beekeepers. They will be our new UU beekeepers, so I'm very happy. Yes. There's a lot of interest in beekeeping over the last years. And as you will see in some of the documentaries, it is a big hope for bees, because if you are a commercial beekeeper with 500 hives, sometimes you have to do treatment to not lose bees. But if we're small beekeepers and we lose them, and chances are very high you lose them, you're out $130 now for bees, for a pound of 3 pounds of bees. That's going out to dinner not too often these days. So it's big giving back to nature. So where shall we continue? I would love to really open up for questions, either for beekeeping back then or now, or how we go forward.